Welcome to Public Speaking Superpowers. This is your host, Karma Spence. What you are about to hear was originally recorded in 2010 as research for my book, Public Speaking Superpowers. After going through all this content, I've decided to release these 80-plus recordings as a bi-weekly podcast. I hope you enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to Public Speaking Superpowers. This is your host, Karma Spence. Today, I'm speaking with Darlene Ellison. Darlene's personal and professional journey, which includes discovering her husband of 10 years was a longtime pedophile, led her to become an expert and consultant on overcoming obstacles and building meaningful alliances. Today, through speaking engagements, workshops, executive retreats, and consulting, she helps businesses, organizations, and associations transform and empower their employees and members. Welcome to Public Speaking Superpowers, Darlene.
Thanks, Karma.
Just so listeners can get a feel for your unique expertise, could you tell us a little about your journey to success in public speaking?
Sure. You know, I never imagined that I would be actually forging a career in public speaking. And sometimes life turns on a dime, if you will. And when I initially started speaking out, it was more from a therapeutic standpoint. For my children, you know, we had a very difficult story, and finding out that this person you've been married to for, you know, well over 10 and a half years had this complete secret life that had existed long before he married me and had continued through the birth of our two children and throughout the marriage. So really, as a part of, I guess if you will, taking the elephant out of the room for my children and for selfishly therapeutic reasons for myself, I felt like it was helpful for us to talk about it so people weren't afraid to talk to us. It was very, very traumatic, very humiliating, but very important, I think, in our journey to recover and be able to hold our heads high and live a good life. And so that's really how it started. And it was really other people commenting to me that, you know, Darlene, if you're talking about this anyway, and as my mother would point out, I could talk to a wall for 7 hours and not care that no one was listening. Maybe you should talk about your story publicly because maybe it would help others. And I thought, who else in the world could be going through this? And realizing only when I did start to speak out, and at a very small level, speaking for free at the local PTAs and mothers associations and things like that, and realizing that this was supposed to be part of the journey, evolving from there. And then realizing, as I'm sure we'll talk about at some point, is the business aspect of it, that public speaking is so much more than just telling a story and making a difference. There was that business piece of it too, and that's the piece that had to be learned and fine-tuned, if you will.
So that segues into my next question, which is, do you believe that public speaking is a learned skill or something you're born being able to do, and why do you feel that way?
Kind of the nature versus nurture thing.
Yeah.
You know, I think that there is a healthy combination of both. I think that a true career in public speaking is both a gift and a skill set, if you will. And the skill set being part of the business aspect of it, the learned piece of it. Do I think anyone could speak in public? Yes, I think it's less comfortable for some. That's why in colleges today, a course in public speaking is so popular. So I think it's something that truly is a gift, the ability to stand in front of hundreds or even thousands of people without blinking an eye and to be able to share whatever your message is, your given message as a speaker. So I think that part is native to the person. I think, though, in my journey, to be able to speak what I call off the cuff, I don't prefab presentations and I tailor my presentations, but to actually be able to speak off the cuff, even if it's a 3-hour presentation or training, to really be able to focus on the behavioral cues and the facial cues of your audience, to know if your message is hitting home, to know if you're putting everybody to sleep, to know if it's uncomfortable, to know if they want to hear more of whatever you're speaking on. So I think that, again, is part of a second nature, understanding behavioral cues of your audience. And then I think the business piece is just that. It's a learned skill set. I speak with meeting coordinators myself. I make all my own bookings. That's very important to me because I feel like it's important that the individuals who are hiring me to speak have that personal connection with me and that we're all on the same page before I get on an airplane and show up to speak. So I think it's a healthy combination of both.
Now imagine that you are a public speaking superhero. And I'm sure that given your topic to some people you are, what do you believe would be your main superpowers?
do they exist or are they the ones that I wish I had?
It would be ones that you could actually advise people about. So I guess you already have them.
If the listener imagines himself sitting across a table or sitting face to face with someone having a chat, and what we say next and what we do is based primarily on listening to what the other has to say. Well, when you're a public speaker, there's nothing to listen to in terms of verbal cues because generally they're listening to you. So I think that there's a superpower in there that is the ability to tune in to the facial and nonverbal cues of one's audience. And it's being in tune, completely being so in tune with your own self and your message and so comfortable in your conversational speaking style that you can move in a room and gauge what you're going to say next based on the cues that are being given to you that are nonverbal from your audience members. My favorite thing in the world is to have my lavalier mic so I can walk the room, and that is to feel the energy and gauge those nonverbal cues from my audience to see what they need from me in terms of what comes next in the message. What story do I tell? What do they need to hear more of? What are they sick of hearing? So I think that that's, if I had to pick a superhero, you know, type power, that would be it. If I could actually hear their thoughts, that'd be really cool. But I may get a little confused.
And reading a room is definitely a very good skill to have. So what kind of advice would you give someone if they wanted to develop that particular superpower?
The greatest, I think, gifts in my resume, if you will, is I'm actually a former counselor, licensed counselor, and have worked with adults who have huge defense mechanisms and worked with children who just run all over the room at 4 years old and you're trying to work with them. And I think that patience in a conversation, again, maybe the best way to start if you're training your superpower is to start when you're one-on-one with someone. Are you listening? Do you not only hear everything they say without talking on top of them, but does what they say match their nonverbal cues? What their body is doing, what their eyes are doing. Are they comfortable with you? Are they uncomfortable with you? Are they uncomfortable with the message at hand, things that you're saying? And I think that that's something that you start with. It's really bringing yourself, I guess, into the moment. You hear about come into the now moment. I find myself, I can be out having dinner with 3 girlfriends, and I find myself listening and focusing on what one person is saying, how that either is consistent or conflicts with their body language, how everyone seems to be responding. Are people thinking about the next thing they're going to say, or are they responding, or is someone being moved? In my presentation, obviously when I'm telling the story, it has become, and I couldn't do this at the beginning, but to be so secure in myself and understand myself, my weaknesses as well as my strengths, to be able to look out in a room and tell my story and to see fairly confidently who those individuals are that are most moved, possibly because they're victims of child abuse, and to be able to gauge that, or those who know somebody who has been abused. I think it comes in our everyday conversation. It really starts within ourselves. Am I being still enough when others are speaking that I am in tune with me, with what they're saying, and with what those nonverbal cues are?
So it really helps to be basically a student of body language.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I have been in many rooms with speakers on the audience side of it where the presentation is canned and where they could care less what my response might be to what they're saying because they are delivering a message that has been memorized in a certain amount of time. And they're trying to just hit points and
right.
Meet it within a time frame. And there is a big difference. And I don't think you can talk about overcoming obstacles or tell a story about like this one without bringing in who you truly are. And if I have a canned message and I'm not paying attention to what's happening with my audience, then I don't think I'm being true to myself or my message.
You know, I totally agree with you on that because I have seen fairly well-known public speakers who are like in the self-help arena.
Right.
And been to one of their presentations and it was obvious that they were just doing their spiel. And you know that they started off being really passionate about that topic. Otherwise, they wouldn't have gotten to where they were.
Right.
But they had gotten to a point where it had become canned for them. And it really, for me at least, it spoiled the whole thing.
Yeah, it does. And I think as a public speaker, part of it is, again, this goes to the business piece of it. Part of it is the homework that the speaker does ahead of the speaking engagement. And again, I can't imagine myself, I don't care if I'm speaking every other day across the country, I cannot imagine a time where I won't want to have a conversation, at least one, with somebody who's coordinating that particular conference or training or presentation. And then we have, like I do a pre-presentation questionnaire and ask questions, and that is to help me gauge who's in my audience. And then usually when I'm on site, I'm asking again, so are your numbers still reflecting this particular group of people? Is this who's sitting in the audience? Because I want to be able to tailor that. And you know what? As a speaker, I mean, no one's perfect. I have walked into a conference and not done my due diligence. And the first thing I do before I start my presentation is to chit-chat with the audience members to find out who's in my audience and what their life experiences are. And I make it just part of the first couple of minutes of the kind of getting to know my audience and them getting to know me. And that was as a result of me not doing my homework ahead of time. But right. it really does help drive the message. My story doesn't change, but how it's delivered and what parts of the message I maybe spend more time on in one group more than another has a lot to do with those nonverbal cues and the people that are sitting there, the what they need to hear. That is oftentimes determined by the people who are booking you in the first place. So that part of that is good business, doing your homework up front.
Right. Now, go back just a moment to the reading the room again. When you're in a one-on-one conversation, I could see how it might be fairly easy to read that body language. Mm-hmm. But when you're one on many, not only are you having to read several bodies at the same time, right. but your own nerves and anxiety, just that energy that comes from being in front of a room, at least until you get comfortable, that can block your ability. And then if you have other challenges, like, for example, I have ADD, which means mm-hmm. social cues kind of go whoosh for me all the time. It's very challenging. What kind of advice would you give someone who, like, maybe is just starting out? They kind of understand body language on a one-on-one, but how do you translate that to one-on-many?
So many times, and I have had people in my evaluations actually comment to this, is as I walk the room, as I'm speaking, and, you know, different rooms and where the projectors are and things like that obviously mandate how I can do this. But I do, when I make eye contact, when I am engaged with a person, as far as I'm concerned, what I'm saying exclusively to them. Now, I may only stay there, eye contact-wise, for 10 or 20 seconds, but then I move, and, you know, there's a scan that you do, and again, it's about slowing down, taking deep breaths, being very comfortable. I mean, if it's conversational, my memory is not even engaged at all because I'm truly having a conversation with all those I'm locking eyes with. And I do a lot of eye locking. And that's just based on the intuition I feel. And, I mean, I've had people that, guys, right after lunch who start to nod off, and they're my eye contact. Because, hey, come on, wake up. I do, and it is so natural. It's just about going slow. And, again, it's about listening. It's not about thinking. It's about listening and being open to everything in the room. And when I do eye lock, it really is, I'm talking to that one person. I may use someone as an example and say, for instance, if you blah, 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 and I'll look at somebody and I'll put them in that scenario and I eye lock with them. Being in tune in the room is when somebody at the back of the room with 450 people in the room sneezes. I do this inevitably and I don't even realize until I've done it. And I'm like, bless you. And then I keep talking. That's just being in tune with everything going on around you. And you know, one of the neatest things I did when I was actually part of my recovery from just the betrayal was I would go out walking at a lake near my home and I'd have the headsets off. I didn't listen to my favorite song. It wasn't about keeping the pace. It wasn't about tuning out the world. And I would take these 1.5 hour walks. Just listen. It is amazing what you hear and what you see when you're really, really still inside of yourself. And I have worked with clients with ADD, and it really is. I used to teach yoga, in fact, to kids with ADHD. it was amazing. I would bring the parents in at the end of the time when the children were in Shavasana, which is like what they call the dead man pose. It's completely still. And they'd say, my child can't be still. And I'd say, come look. Because we helped these children be so in tune with every piece of them that it wasn't about thinking. It was about feeling. And that is something that I think, again, it's a practice. It's a meditation. It's a being still, being silent, listening to what's around you. And practice when you go out with your friends. Practice when you go to a restaurant, looking around. I mean, practice what those verbal cues and look around and see what you gauge from that. I spend a lot of time in airports when I speak engagements, and I do this all the time. It's a fun little exercise.
Oh, you're right. One time I do my morning walk, and I usually have my headphones on, but one time I decided to not have my headphones on, and one of the things I noticed was that sounds have texture, and I had never really noticed that before. And I think if you could do that when you're alone, then you could probably train yourself to do that when you're with others.
Oh, absolutely. And you got to learn to, if you're so in tune, you learn to tune out the white noise. You think about little babies who fall asleep when their parents bring them to a restaurant.
Right.
And they're so in tune with the rhythm of their own breathing, they can completely tune out the white noise. I used to train kids with attentional issues how to do that and to really focus on that. And it's cleaning out the white noise. And when you do so, and again, I think it starts internally, though. It starts within you. Are you still? Is your mind racing? Adrenaline is great, and it's fine, and it keeps you going, but it really shouldn't have anything to do with your head. How should I hold my hand? I've seen these speaker workshops where they're like, make sure you walk across the stage at least 4 times. And I can just imagine it. If I had to stop and think, oh, it's time to walk across the stage, or, oh, maybe I shouldn't point, I should open my palm. And if I'm thinking, then I am not connecting with anybody but me.
You know, it's probably a lot like driving, where when you're first learning, you're thinking, okay, now I'm putting on the brakes, now I'm putting on gas, brakes, gas. But eventually, at some point, you become one with that vehicle. And you're putting on the brakes without even thinking, I'm putting on the brakes.
Right.
And that's probably how public speaking is. You have to learn what the gestures are until they become a part of who you are.
Right. And that's why in public speaking it's so important. When they say practice, say join Toastmasters or practice with groups or do a lot of free presentations. Practice, practice, practice. It's not because you need to memorize what you're saying. That's not what practice is about. Practice is about, A, getting over those jitters if you have them when you get in front of people. And secondly, being able to become so calm and still within you, mind, body, that you are able to actually engage and catch those cues throughout the room. And that's why you speak, you speak, you speak, and you do as much as you can. And it really is to be able to do that, to engage. And I mean, my first audiences were maybe 20 people. And I've grown to hundreds and hundreds of people, depending on if I'm giving a keynote or a plenary or doing a training. I like to think that when I just delivered a presentation for 250 women, I'd like to think that they felt the same experience as if 20 of them would have been in a room with
right.
me. And I think that that's something that we're able to, it's a connection. And you've got to connect with yourself if you're going to connect with everybody in the room, especially if they're not talking.
Right. Well, thank you so much for sharing your unique insights into public speaking with us today.
Well, thank you, Karma. I love what you're doing here.
Thank you. This is the end of today's episode of Public Speaking Superpowers. This is your host, Karma Spence, signing off.
Because this was recorded a few years back, I've cut the speaker's contact information from the recording because it may have been out of date. If you would like to learn more about today's speaker, go to publicspeakingsuperpowers.com/featured speakers and click on her picture. I'm working to keep the information there as fresh as possible.